The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Book of Serenity, case number 4. The World Honored One Points to the Ground. Introduction. As soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. With a single horse and a single lance, the land is extended. Who is this person who can master in any place and meet the source in everything? Case. As the World Honored One was walking with the congregation, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, "This spot is good to build a sanctuary." Indra, emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground and said, "The sanctuary is built." The World Honored One smiled. Hongzhe's verse, "The boundless spring on the 100 grasses, picking up what comes to hand, he uses it knowingly." The 16-foot golden Buddha, a collection of virtuous qualities, casually leads him by the hand into the red dust. Able to be master in the dusts, from outside creation, a guest shows up. Everywhere life is sufficient in its way, no matter if one is as clever as others. So our second day, looking into this, of course, as we practice together, as we train together, we say, time and space becomes quite unusual. You may have noticed, in terms of space, here we are all in our separate geographic locations, some of us just around the corner, others of us quite a bit further away, and yet somehow sharing this intention, we come together and create the sanctuary of this retreat. This, we say, is the functioning of Sangha, and the Sangha is those of us here on the screen, and will include perhaps some people listening to this talk in the future. But our Sangha, of course, includes everyone practicing Zen, and every human being, and in the broader sense, in sentient beings too, the rocks and the grass tips, the stars and the universes, all of us sitting together here, all of us looking into this, looking into this through the perspective of this apparently simple story. The Buddha walking with his congregation, walking with his Sangha. What a thing it is to walk together. Of course, we do this in between our formal sitting practice. We do this walking practice. And we are encouraged to walk together, even as we walk alone, even in the temple. If we were all at 1030 Pleasant Street, we would be walking alone together. And here, even more, we walk, but in some ways our walking is an expression of something more than we can understand. Even our life itself is an expression of something more than we can know. And the little mind, the everyday mind, of course, such a gift, as we say again and again, Do not try to get rid of it. But the ordinary mind wants to know what it's supposed to do. How can I help? What am I supposed to get rid of? What am I supposed to try to get more of? We can say that greed, anger, and ignorance are the everyday mind's strategy for enlightenment. So I want more of this. I don't want that. Maybe if I just zone out. And so quite sweet in its own way, this part of us that wants to game the system, that wants to get something. But this effort of wanting to get something is grounded in the fundamental delusion of separation. This delusion of separation, again, is not a problem, not something that we should be trying to erase, but rather the entry point. So Buddha, walking with his Sangha, points to the ground. As I've been sitting with this koan and contemplating it over the past few days, it came to me that there's another story of the Buddha pointing to the ground when he was sitting under the Bo tree after he had left his palace and embarked on a spiritual journey, gone through all kinds of different practices and asceticisms, decided that asceticism and extremism was not the way. And he sat down under the Bo tree and sat for a long, long, long time. Some people say it was even 25 minutes he sat. And as he sat on the eve of his great awakening, as he sat, he was not filled with bliss and calm and serenity, as you might imagine, or as you might wish for yourself. The Buddha himself was assailed by Mara, the forces of delusion. And Mara brought the armies of delusion to distract the Buddha, to move him from his seat. Because what he was doing, and indeed what you and I are doing, is quite audacious. Who dares to look directly at life? One Zen practitioner I know wrote a book about whether Buddhism is a religion, Buddhism and psychoanalysis. And although Buddhism, of course, does not have a deity, the Buddha we're speaking about is not God, not some supreme being. And many people define religion as some kind of belief in some supreme being. Buddhism does not require that kind of belief, is non-creedal. Nothing you have to believe to practice here. But she decided that Buddhism was indeed a religion because in Buddhism, we are moving toward the ultimate. As Melissa said last night, the Zen is about awakening. It is about moving towards something that is inconceivable and wondrous and weird and unknowable and immeasurable. And as we do this, the terrain gets steep and unreliable. You may have noticed this in your own sitting, that one moment things seem to be going well, and then the next moment things are terrible, or you've planned to suffer all evening, and suddenly you're not suffering. We encounter our life, and as we sit, and in this simple, this elegant practice, we can begin to discern some patterns, and the primary pattern, of course, is that everything comes and goes. And that the life you encounter is the life you encounter, regardless of what you want or don't want. Sometimes the mind is clear, sometimes the mind is agitated. The Buddha says, points to the ground, and he pointed to the ground when Mara came and said, "Who do you think you are? How dare you do this?" And Buddha reached out and touched the ground. Many statues of the Buddha you can see with his right hand reaching down with his fingertips to touch the ground, to seek or maybe express this foundation, his oneness with the universe. And so this pointing to the ground, this touching the ground, quite a thing. And we are encouraged to do this in our own practice, to touch the ground. Practice can easily move off into the realms of fantasy and philosophy, and even in some ways the realms of insight, as we sit these long periods of time, or sometimes even short periods, moments come and clarity comes. We see some way we've been caught. We feel that we are released. Or maybe we see how we've been caught and we're simply stuck there, knowing that we're trapped, but without any way to be someplace else. Each moment, the instruction is the same, that here is the entry point, touching ground. We touch ground by being embodied in our posture. Why we here in the Zen school emphasize postures so much, as the mind becomes unreliable. The mind that can get kind of desperate as we run to the end of our rope. I so appreciated what Melissa said last night about the mind getting tired, the little self, the one that wants to be a good student or thinks they know what's going on, or the one that keeps separating ourselves from the rest of life. It actually requires ongoing effort to create a fixed self. Requires much energy to defend "I am this," because the evidence is so vast in the other direction. You may be this in this moment, but we don't know about the next moment, and each moment is different, bringing some opportunity, some challenge. And so it is exhausting. I know myself, I take two or three naps a day on Sesshin, this work of collecting ourselves, of returning again and again. And this work of going beyond what we know and what we understand. In the preface to this, I was really caught by the phrase, "With a single horse and single lance, the land is extended." During the time of the arising of Zen, 8th, 9th, 10th century in China, it was a time of political chaos, invaders coming, taking over portions of the empire, governments coming and going. It was a turbulent time, and there were forays to extend the land of the kingdom. And when you wanted to extend the boundaries of your kingdom, you sent out the army. And here the image is of sending out one soldier. They go out with their spear, their lance, and on a single horse to extend the kingdom. And I think in some ways our Zazen is our attempt to extend the boundaries of our life. We usually live our life within the boundaries of what we think is going on, of who we think we are. My favorite phrase a student once mentioned is that we all live in the snotty-nosed neighborhood of our mind, and we imagine that we are seeing the world quite clearly, and we can feel sorry for people who don't see as clearly as we do. But we begin to get glimmers that the stories we tell, even the stories about ourself that we hold on to so fiercely, these stories are not what they appear to be. And so our work in Zazen is to extend the kingdom, to go beyond our opinion. You may think that this is how it is going, this is how you are, but are you willing? Do you have the courage and the heart to step beyond, to step beyond your opinion? And as I think Beverly said in the Dharma dialogue, this is something that requires great courage. Though we suffer in the prison we have built for ourselves, we suffer with our certainty of separation. We cling tightly to it. They say an abused child will cling to their parent, even though this parent has caused them great harm. And we can all perhaps feel that, clinging to what we know. But this possibility of living a wilder life, a life that requires faith and determination. Because when you get to the place where you don't know, where you really don't know, it's quite a thing. It's quite a thing when you run out of strategies, when you run out of good ideas, when you run out of willpower. Our practice of Zen is not a practice essentially of self-discipline and willpower, but it is rather touching something, aligning with something that is bigger and broader and more trustworthy than any idea we have. The body, how wonderful, the brilliance of the body, the brilliance of your body, of your liver and your spleen, of the capillaries and the immune system and all of the beings in your body that don't even belong to you, the microbes and the biome that we cannot live without. We are this wondrous system with the small brain, the little self, thinking that it's really in charge. You are not in charge of what you meet. You are not in charge of your life. And yet the Buddha said your choices and how you spend your energy, what you head toward, makes all the difference. And how you meet what arises. So at the edge of the territory to venture forth with your little self, your spear, and your horse, we all have this opportunity to step beyond the boundary. And when we step into this world, this true world, we are met exactly and met immediately. And yet in this new world, of course, in just a moment or two, the mind will help out and take over and construct a new world. So there are boundaries that we can break through. There are insights that can arise as we sit. And yet we are told to hold whatever insight, whatever awakening happens, to hold it lightly. We say today's enlightenment is tomorrow's delusion. So we're practicing not gaining the territory and then defending the territory, but we are practicing a way of living that is moving into the suchness of the moment, and requires faith and faith and faith and determination and determination and determination, requires us to rely again and again on something more than we can know or understand. And this, the Buddha points to the ground, this is a good place to build a sanctuary. This place, whatever place you are in right now, whatever mind moment. In Dokusan, I'm often conscious as I meet with each one of you, as I have the great privilege to meet with each one of you, that my main appreciation is you are exactly where you need to be. Often people will come with some kind of problem they're encountering. And again and again, my job is to point to exactly where you are now. This can be, I really do not like where I am. So then we enter through aversion, enter through not liking. I read again had us read Uji, Being Time, an excerpt from one of Dogen's, one of his essays that Alan read to us last night as part of our bedtime story. And his wonderful thing, you know, time is the self is time, each blade of grass is the entire earth. And then at the very end of all this wonderful and intentionally confusing stuff, he says, reflect now whether any being or any world is left out of the present moment. Reflect now whether any being or any world or anything is left out of this moment. So our practice of Zen is not a practice of believing what the teacher said or believing what some other teacher said or some other person, but in some ways, learning to believe and to trust our own experience. In some way, the Buddha points and says, this is a wonderful place for a sanctuary. Indra picks a blade of grass and says, the sanctuary is built. He doesn't say, I'll start the sanctuary with a blade of grass. He says, the sanctuary is built in this moment, in this activity. Dogen says that past and future are here in this moment. Everyone you've ever known, all of your ancestors, all of the people who come after you, friends, acquaintances, when you sit, your whole universe, your whole world comes and sits with you. Lin Shi said, tell me, is anything lacking here? So the kind of faith we're talking about is not belief in something other than us, but the faith to be willing to look directly in this moment, to bring ourselves to the cushion, to bring ourselves to the dinner table, to bring ourselves to our life, amidst the changing circumstances. Guaranteed, this is how it will be, how it is, time after time, something else comes. And beware of the places that feel familiar. These places where you think, oh, I've been here before, I just don't like this. These places that appear to be familiar are masquerading. When you look more closely, when you stay, Buddha stopped and pointed to the ground. This would be a good place to build a sanctuary. And Indra takes a blade of grass and says, the sanctuary is constructed. This is the place to look. Your whole life is here. Breathing in, a whole life breathes in. Breathing out, a whole life breathes out. Body, breath, and mind, everything that has happened, that will happen. No need to be anywhere else. But simply this courageous and difficult and a wondrous path. Such an opportunity for each one of us here today. So let me just finish by reading the introduction and the case. As soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. With a single horse and a single lance, the lands extended. Who is this person who can be master in any place and meet the source in everything? As the world-honored one was walking with the congregation, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, this spot is good to build a sanctuary. Indra, the emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground and said, the sanctuary is built. The world-honored one smiled. Thank you. Please sit comfortably, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue, looking into this matter together. And like Melissa said yesterday, I want to encourage all of us to come forward, to dare to take your lance and your horse, and extend yourself. Whatever is arising in your heart mind is not just personal. And our Dharma dialogue is one way we all step forward for the good of the whole Sangha. So I encourage you to consider, especially if you're one of the people who doesn't often do that. So raising Zoom hands, and we'll Michael and Melissa and I will respond. Marcus.
Thank you for the talk. I think it's, just what rose for me was just thinking how many, or how easy it is to turn your back and, in those tough moments and, want something different and not, like you said, face what's right in front of us. And, I just kind of wanted to share what took place this morning. Even for me, I was probably started crying more in the first morning of practice today than I have in 10 years. And it was the same thing. I just kept, trying to avoid it. Why is this happening? Playing a million stories in my head as why I don't want this. And, then that it got to the point where I, just sat with it and let it do its thing. But no, I really appreciated the talk and it resonated with me.
Yeah. Well, the wonderful thing is, despite our best efforts to avoid it, eventually it catches up to us. So it doesn't rely on our brilliance, or I think this morning I'll really face it. But there comes a time, as you say, when we kind of have no choice. And this place of no choice, like I'd like to stop crying, but I can't. And this deep arising that comes up, no need to understand or to know, but we are touching these deep wells of life here as we do this work together.
And I think too, you know, this is the gift of our meditation practice of Zazen. We can try to figure out why things are happening and go into it, but instead, turning and meeting is a feature of Zazen. You know, that there's you can generate all kinds of thoughts and emotions and all kinds of states of mind, but ultimately, it's just the sitting still. Being present, that's the facing it. That's all we need. And it seems so simple that I think we love to complicate things. At least I do. The mind comes in, why? Oh, it's because when I was three, you know, wh or whatever, or because I'm a sorry excuse for a human being. Any of the stuff that comes up for us is always just thoughts, delusive thoughts. And so we come back to our Zazen. The primary posture for being fully present in our life. And that sounds like that's what you've been doing.
And we are so fortunate. We are so fortunate that this ha you are fortunate that this happened, and we are fortunate that you shared this with us. This is how the practice works.
We had a new sitter many years ago who came and listened to a Dharma dialogue, and afterwards she was talking to me in the hall, and she said, "I loved the Dharma dialogue." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "I thought I was the only one who suffered, and now I realize we all do." So it arises. Yeah. Thanks, Marcus. Anne.
This is completely off. I mix words up. Is Indra the same as Indra's net?
Yes. Yeah. Indra is the number one god in that cosmology.
So Indra's net is bringing in a whole nother mystical system into Buddhism, right?
Well, and actually, Buddhism is in some ways a reformed Hinduism. So Buddhism arose and in some ways appropriated the language of Hinduism and worked with that and changed that and morphed that. So many teachings in Buddhism are quite similar to teachings in Hinduism.
Or are Hindu teachings that have been a little bit shifted around to really be in relationship to the teachings of Buddhism?
So the characters from Hinduism show up in Buddha.
Oh yeah, all the time. Yeah, it's kind of wonderful. But you know, it's like the same thing happens with Judaism and Christianity. And with Judaism and Islam, because both Islam and Christianity are based in, you know, people were Jewish first, and then, right, so like in Islam, especially in Sufism, Moses always shows up as a figure of fun, like he's just so deluded in Islam. But it's the same Moses. All the events of his life are the same. The same thing happens in Christianity with all, you know, Abraham and all the different characters show up because the people who were the first exemplars of the new religion, the Buddha was a Hindu. He was raised as a Hindu. And he then everybody said, "What are you doing?" Right. Yeah.
Thank you. Sean.
Yeah, thank you, David, for the talk. I really enjoyed it. Certainly resonated with me. And I've heard, you know, that term courage or courageous. I heard it a couple of times during your talk, and of course, we heard it yesterday. And it brings to mind what I find to be one of the more truly courageous things, and that is to know someone fully and to be known. by someone. And I'm wondering if you could speak just for a moment about how Zen allows for that, to know someone and be known.
So, Sean, I'm going to make you say something a little more. So, how do you let yourself be known in relationship or in the moment?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah, good question. I'll tell you, it's kind of a scary thing for me, as it might be for others. I don't want to speak for anybody else. But to be, I guess, if I were to think about it, to be fully present, to try to be as fully present as one possibly can be is probably the what comes to mind immediately when I think of being known and getting to know someone.
Right.
And what are you noticing right now in your lived experience of this moment? How is that coming forth for you right now?
Well, right at this moment, I'm nervous.
That's all that matters.
Yeah,
Everything else is just
yeah,
stories and
nervous. Yeah,
ideas.
I'm
Nervous
nervous
right
Oh,
now.
you
Yep.
said nervous.
Yeah, I'm
Yes,
nervous.
yeah.
right. And of course, cœur, the word in French that courage comes from in English, means the heart. Right? So this is not a being brave, being courageous is not just plowing forward with no feeling or emotion. It's always leading with the heart, which can be terrified to do. You know, that's why putting up your Zoom hand in a Dharma dialogue, or your physical hand if we're at the temple. Oh my God, when I first started doing that, my heart would beat, I would get sweaty palms, my voice would shake. That's all part of being courageous. It's not foolish bravery which denies those feelings. It's just coming forward. And of course, we also encourage this in Dokusan. You don't have a choice in Sesshin anymore. You used to be able to choose, but you do have a choice for regular practice periods whether you go to Dokusan or not. And some people don't never come. They just don't. They avoid it like the plague. They don't come when there's Dokusan night or Dokusan morning because of this very thing. The teacher's job is to meet you. And not your history or all your personality quirks, not all, we do get to know that about each other, but your essential being. And that's terrifying. It really is. So, yeah, great question and great response. You really showed up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Chad.
Thank you for the talk and all those feelings you just mentioned, Melissa. I feel that every time I put my hand up for Dokusan or for Dharma dialogue. But what really struck me today with the talk was the sense of immediacy, right? That putting the blade of grass, that the temple or the sanctuary is there, it's complete. Whereas like that translates to me, and I thought about it in terms of how do I act and behave, and I overanalyze things, and I either cling to something joy or I want to get out of this place that's unpleasant. And but the action, the call to action, and then how do I motivate myself to have that action to actually be immediate is the challenge sometimes, because I can get stuck in my own brain. And it always kind of comes back for me to the precepts of like saving all beings, right? Like I'm not in this alone. There are other people out there, but then also I don't want to limit myself by being stuck here when I really want to go out to the world.
Well, and I think that this the Bodhisattva vows and the precepts, as we really look into it, are not what we should do, but what we long to do. And so, for me too, sometimes I think, well, I don't know if I'm worth it, but other people are, and we do this practice. You do this, you take the risk, you extend the territory, not for ultimately personal growth, but for all beings, practice to offer what you have. And it doesn't matter whether you think you have enough or not enough, We offer the fullness of who we are, and that makes so much difference.
Yeah. You know, also the motivation comes from the recognition that is an actual felt experience, that we are not separate. And once that starts happening, it's really, it's hard, right? I don't, when I pass a beggar in the street, you know, here in 21st century America, Worcester, there's beggars in the streets. It hurts. They're, like, I hurt, but it doesn't mean that I'm gonna, you know, take him home or you know, give him $50. I mean, I could do that, but I have to act from the place of the hurt and see what is mine to do here, but not just try to figure out what's the right thing to do or the best thing to do. But the motivation, it does come from your own practice heart, and there's the courage again, the coming from your own heart. To first we have to get in touch with it. Otherwise, it's just all ideas. Should do this, shouldn't do that, you know. But just to feel that hurt takes a kind of courage right there.
And the awareness too, that the awareness is an action. I think it's Joan Tollefson says awareness is its own action. Awareness that I am the type of person who likes to analyze things, or I'm the type of person who doesn't act. And that awareness is action in of itself. And that's the ground of where we start.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sabrina.
So this is just a cheeky comment that came up, but how could I possibly raise my hand if I don't have anything to say?
Oh, I love it. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So honest.
And Sabrina, how wonderful you, this is your demonstration and answer to the koan. How do I do it? I don't know. How did you do it? Right. So I think this is the kind of leap. So here you are presenting Sabrina, presenting, how do I do this?
Yeah.
Right? How do I do what I've just done? and we think somehow we don't know or think we have to know in a certain way. But we jump in. We sign up for Sesshin even though we remember what it was like last time, right? Or we don't know. We show up, and then life teaches us the Dharma. The practice teaches us how to practice. Anybody who says they know how to practice, I would be very leery of them. I still don't know, but there is this. You know, do it. Okay.
And I just hope you're feeling, but you might not be, but I am, the power of saying, I have nothing to say. You know, it makes me think about these old stories in Zen, and there's the Hasidic story about the, you know, the rabbi who goes up and says, I'm nothing. And then the cantor thinks, oh, me too, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. And then the janitor hears all that and goes up and says, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. And the rabbi says to the cantor, look who thinks he's nothing, right? You know, this is like so amazing that we human beings can do this. We can say, I have nothing. Yeah. And just the saying, I have nothing, is everything and inspiring. Weird. Like, you didn't mean to be inspiring, but you didn't, right. You didn't know. But just to come forward and say the truth of your being, that's courage in the way we're talking about courage. Yeah. Thanks.
Susan.
Yeah. Thank you for naming the terror. And Sabrina for, you know, I'm afraid, often afraid of realizing that I might not have anything to say. And then if I do have something to say, there's the terror that everybody will think it's absolutely the most ridiculous thing they've ever heard.
Yes, yeah.
But...
Yeah. I just want to say here, welcome to my life.
Yeah. I thought I'd say but. It's not a but, it's an and.
It's an and.
And
It's
yeah.
beautiful, beautiful.
I was captivated by your whole talk, David. And again, one of the phrases that we use in these sessions is in the Tathagata, the gata, the initial words we say, whatever they're called. And terrified of not knowing the right words to call the things that we do.
Oh, the Gata of Atonement.
Yes, thank you. this formless field of liberation, whatever
Oh, right. The verse
that
of the
means in the
Kesa.
oh,
Yeah.
the verse of the Kesa, that's it.
Yeah.
And
Formless field of
so
benefaction.
I was in this formless field, but then at the end, the phrase that caught me and brought me to a different place completely was meet the source.
Yeah.
Meet the source. I thought, well, what's the source? Well, maybe I'm the source, or maybe I don't, what is the source? And it took that whole formless field and presented a different question. What is the well that I'm trying to find, or whatever. Or maybe I need to stop trying. And anyway, that's why I get so totally inarticulate. So that's it. But that phrase, meet the source, somehow struck me in a new way.
Yeah, and so I so appreciate what is the source, noticing how certain things speak to us. These we call them turning words, right? So somehow you've read that or recited that, heard that many times before, but this morning, just now, whenever, meet the source, and then it awakens. What is the source? Where does this all come from? Where does the boundless field come from? And I hear in your tone not that you're going to start reading books about this and write a treatise about it, but a kind of wonder and a looking, this moment, where does it come from? Right? How to, and this is we're heading, my teacher used to say, we're swimming upstream toward the source world, right? And if you think you've arrived, you're wrong, right? Because you've limited it. Yeah.
I'm
Great. Thank you.
also thinking of a koan where the student approaches the teacher with a question, and the teacher says, "It's enough to have asked the question. Take your bows and step back." This is—it's not a rejection. This is it. Also thinking about—I think it's Emerson who said, "Who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying." So the just asking the question, stepping. What is the source? It's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, what is the source? How do I raise my hand if I have nothing to say? Right. Jenny.
Thank you for the talk, David. I grabbed onto a sentence you said, that greed, anger, and ignorance are the everyday mind strategy for enlightenment. And yeah, just sitting with that, and when I see them in myself, I want to deny or not own them. And when I see them in somebody else, I want to fight, I guess. And just thinking, an ordinary mind is the way. Wow, where am I going with this?
What you've already said is great, and
Okay.
just your noticing the those two impulses around yourself and around others, that is exactly what Joan Tollefson is saying when she says, all you have to do is pay attention, right? That this awareness is its own action. Because once you start shining a light on these impulsive actions internally, then they can't survive. Ultimately, they start to fall away, but you can't make them go away. That's that's the trap we get caught in, right? So yeah, I mean, I think just really well said, to notice, just to notice, this is what happens for me.
And that awareness is not the judgmental awareness that's going to fix it, right? Because that's the near enemy. Oh, I realize I've been greedy and I'm going to stop that for sure, right? And that, what I hear you saying is just noticing, oh, I do this. And of course you do it. I do it. We all do it. There's something quite sweet and poignant about this little self. You know, if I get more, then I'll wake up. If I, you know, and so we just see it and meet it and let it be and on its own.
And remember too that in the Mahayana, greed, anger, and ignorance contain the seeds of generosity and equanimity and compassion. So you know, the greed is just that alone. When it's left alone and isn't constantly being tormented by the mind and all the ideas about it, it's a gesture of, you know, wanting goes forward into the world and becomes compassion. It's kind of amazing. And anger, you know, cuts through delusion, and ignorance becomes just an ease of being. But we can't, in Mahayana Buddhism, in Zen, we don't try to replace those things. You know, I'm going to be all generous and compassionate and even. Instead, we say, wait, keep looking at what's actually here. And wait and sit. The sitting, Zazen, so powerful. Like what Marcus was saying, I just met it.
Right? Yeah, I kind of remembered. So when I see it in others, it's not like I'm standing up here on this mountaintop looking at you down in the muck. But no, it's more like this is what connects me with all beings.
Yes. Oh, yes. Wow.
Right.
Right.
And what a fundamental shift that is, right?
Yeah.
Fixing from them as opposed to me. But oh, yeah, here we are.
And so the seed of the judging mind is the connecting. That's exactly what you're saying. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Thanks, Jenny. Joe, and let's just do, we'll do a Joe and then two more.
Thank you so much for your talk, David. And thanks to everybody who said that they were nervous and got hands sweaty and things when they speak, because that gave me the courage to because I get the same way. But I kept thinking when I heard the koan over and over again, admiring the attitude of the world honored one who saw a place and thought this is a suitable place to build a temple, just that impulse, because I think my small self has the tendency to say, you know, this is a suitable place to build a prison more often. And
yeah.
Wow. Oh.
Between.
Yeah.
Just seeing the possibility in the worlds inside of the small thing as a place to establish something. Or just that's already there. It's just already there. That's all.
that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's so much, Joe. We're encouraged in the koan to identify with each of the characters. So you are the world honored one. Joe, the world honored one, was walking with his friends. But this choosing to honor the sacredness rather than to try to keep things out and fence it off, I think you're really sensing that the possibility for each one of us to choose this place.
Already established.
Yeah, yeah, great. Thanks for your sweaty hands, Joe, for enduring them. And at the temple,
Thank you for the talk, David. I feel like I have to say something since my name Corwin also starts with that same root, core, heart friend.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, heart friend.
Yeah, yeah.
And you reminded me that, you know, every time I come to Sesshin, I think, Wait, I'm going to have to figure out something to say six times, six Dokusan in 48 hours. And so there's the little bit of fear there. And, you know, as the Tanto, I have to say something in the middle of the afternoon. And there's a certain trepidation I have of having to unmute and disturb everybody's silence to say something like, what am I going to say? But, you know, like, Sabrina said, you know, how do I say something when there's nothing to say? Or I think it was Sean yesterday who said, I don't really have anything. Wait, here are two things to say. It somehow is there. Mm-hmm. And the people who come into Dokusan and say, I have nothing to say. And somehow there's something there. And sometimes that something is just the silence too. Yeah. And just how wonderful it all is and how it all just works out in spite of ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the in spite of ourselves is a really important phrase you just used, because I can't remember if I said this when I gave the talk yesterday, but I didn't connect to this koan at all when we decided to do it. And did I say that? Mm-hmm. I can't, yeah. And then where did it come from? Where did that talk, all that blabbing on? Where and, you know, it's my job. I had to say something. You have to say something, as Katagiri called his, Katagiri Roshi called his book, and you do, that's the core win, the brave friend who just steps forward. How wonderful that is. Yeah, and I feel moved to say, you know, Alan talked about this last night, about David and me, you know, having the courage to start the temple and all that, but where it came from, I had a dream that I was in full monastic robes walking on a brick pathway heading towards a gazebo. It was years before, oh, I just got a shiver. It was years before we saw the backyard of the temple. Where did that come from? And it kind of goes back to being time, that all of these things are arising outside of time and space. And we just have to kind of keep opening to this dreamlike world. You know, life is but a dream. So we just keep rowing the boat.
And just quickly, just to refer back to what Sean said this morning about being willing to be seen. Mm. Usually we spend so much time curating ourself to present some things and hide the other things. And so Doksan or Dharma dialogue is this showing up as ourself, but our Zazen is exactly this too. You know, as we're sitting Zazen, can you allow yourself to be seen, right? Can you allow yourself to be right where you are without being a Zen student or playing any role? We are practicing this edge. And I do believe we can get better. We can deepen our faith as we raise our hand and we don't die. As you turn on the microphone in the middle of the afternoon and something comes out, well, and me too, I give a Dharma talk, something happens, begin to rely on not ourselves, but something else.
And another thing about this, such a wonderful comment, clearly inspiring us, you know, going back to that dream that I had. So it seemed like the most important thing to do. There were a lot of obstacles. And then we have to be willing to recognize that perhaps it was a mistake. You know, maybe I did say something foolish when I turned on the microphone, but at least it came forward. You know, we had a big split in the organization after we bought the temple. It wasn't the right thing for the whole organization. So is that a mistake? Is it not a mistake? But the force of, I have to turn on the microphone, is all that matters. So mistake, sometimes we say that Zen is one continuous mistake, all this bravery coming forward, and then, well, okay, let's see what happens.
Great, thank you. Madhu, last word.
So I opened my mouth, the mistake probably, but you know, the line that resonated with me when you spoke, David Roshi, is when you said abused children clinging on to their abusive parents. And I couldn't help but think about all of us here, you know, traumatized, whether we agree or not, to various degrees, but clinging to Zen, for respite, right? And as much as we are willing to look at ourselves and be responsible for our actions and, you know, be willing to look at our anger and our sadness or whatever feeling is arising for us, there is also another part to it. The Sangha, teachers, everybody, it's all interconnected. So to what extent can we only be take the responsibility of some hurt and blame that probably comes our way? And what is the part, the world in it, you know?
Yeah, such wonderful issues you raise, and we all are traumatized in some way, and we do, and I guess we're choosing, what do we cling to? I was thinking of the three refuges. What is it that we hold on to? Where do we go when things get really difficult? And this possibility of taking refuge in the Sangha, and in the teachings and teachers, and in some mystery we can never understand. So both seeing our clinging to our story, well, I'm not a very good Zen student, or Zen is going to save me. Both of those are delusive stories that are not actually very helpful. So both holding on to posture and breath and stillness and eyes lowered, and also opening to turning toward the world, receiving the world, showing ourselves, our true selves. Yeah. So with that, thank you, everyone who has spoken, everyone who has listened. Let's come back to our Zazen posture just for a few breaths before we begin walking.